A T-38 trainer with two on board goes down in the Mojave Desert. A controversial aviation attorney says don't blame the crew of 3407. And don't sniff the cork before you pour a glass of this stuff. This is Aero News. I'm Paul Plack. Thanks for downloading this AeroCast. Here's what's up in aviation for Friday, May 22, 2009. The U.S. Air Force has the unfortunate task of convening another investigation board. A T-38 tandem jet trainer went down yesterday north of Edwards Air Force Base. Local media says one crew member was dead, the other airlifted to a hospital in unknown condition. The Associated Press reports, meanwhile, the U.S. Navy has suspended its search for two crew members who remain missing after the crash of an HH-60 Seahawk helicopter off San Diego Tuesday night. Three bodies were recovered. The Navy says its efforts now shift to salvage feasibility. Watch for updates on both these stories at aero-news.net. Arthur Allen Wolk is an attorney associated with some pretty controversial litigation against the aviation industry. But in a recent commentary on his law firm's website, he sounds like one of the more reasoned voices in his industry on the topic of Continental Connections Flight 3407, and, more specifically, the revelations in the cockpit voice recorder transcripts. While the pilots have taken a lot of the blame, Wolk insists, quote, "The flight crew was blameless for this crash, and everyone investigating the crash knows it. It's just easier to blame the dead crew than to blame the manufacturer who failed to equip this airliner with modern anti-ice equipment. The airplane suffered a tail stall as soon as the flaps 15 setting was selected, and the crew did what they were taught. They reversed the procedure and retracted the flaps. The captain, in spite of the hideous criticism for having non-essential conversations below 10,000 feet, was otherwise professional and all required briefings were carried out. It is true that the captain was not the world's best pilot, and the first officer was a kid. Their training stunk, and their non-pertinent discussions below 10,000 feet demonstrated poor judgment. However, the transcript from the cockpit voice recorder, read in context, reveals that nothing in their past or their conduct on that flight caused this accident. Blaming this crew is a hideous attempt to hide the truth. Airplanes with de-icing boots no longer have a place in commercial aviation." Unquote. You can read Wolk's commentary in full at aero-news.net. In a development you may have missed on Wednesday, a toast was offered aboard the International Space Station. The participants were Expedition 19 Commander Gennady Padalka and Flight Engineers Mike Barrett and Koichi Wakata. The exact place was the Destiny Laboratory. The beverage was recycled human waste. Yep, turns out the samples of the output from that cantankerous water recycling system on the station that were sent back to be tested on the ground earlier passed those tests. NASA radioed the news to the station on Wednesday. Barrett commented, quote, "This has been the stuff of science fiction. Everybody's talked about recycling water in a closed-loop system, but nobody's ever done it before. Here we are today with the first round of recycled water," unquote. Kirk Shireman at the Johnson Space Center notes, quote, "This system will reduce the amount of water we must launch to the station once the shuttle retires and also test out a key technology required for sending humans on long-duration missions to the Moon and Mars," unquote. You know, personally, I'd want to make sure the system accumulated a lot more hours on the Hobbs before I counted on it during a trip lasting months to the Red Planet. What happens if you get halfway there and it fails? I guess you better pack your Altoids. Up next on ANN, a major piece of NASA's Constellation program falls into place, gently. If the Air Force transitions to UAVs, can the Air Guard be far behind? And Jay LaFoy gets an upgrade at L3. You're listening to Aero News.
Uncramp your style in a new Citation CJ2 Plus from Cessna. Now with integrated ProLine 21 avionics, FADEC, and a restyled cockpit and cabin. In the CJ2 Plus, you'll carry more payload than you could in the original CJ2. You'll climb and cruise faster. You'll have the freedom to use even shorter runways. And you'll do it all on less fuel. For a sure thing, call 1-800-4-CESSNA.
We're back with more of your Aero Briefing for May 22nd. I'm Paul Plack. Lost amid all the hoopla surrounding the rescue of Hubble and beverage innovations on the International Space Station, NASA reported a successful test of a key component of the Constellation program this week. On Wednesday, the largest rocket parachutes ever tested performed to spec at the U.S. Army's Yuma Proving Ground in Arizona. The three main parachutes measure 150 feet in diameter and weigh 2,000 pounds each. Their job is to gently lower the Ares 1 rocket's spent first stage motor to an ocean splashdown after each Orion launch, permitting its recovery for use on future flights. ATK Space Systems in Utah is the prime contractor for the first stage booster. ATK's subcontractor, United Space Alliance of Houston, is responsible for design, development, and testing of the parachutes at its facilities at NASA's Kennedy Space Center in Florida. The future of aerial warfare is UAVs. The writing is on the wall, but not everybody who reads it is happy. Quoted in Politico, Joint Chiefs Chairman Michael Mullen told the Senate Armed Services Committee last week, quote, "We're at a real time of transition here in terms of the future of aviation," unquote. Mullen says he's among those who believe the military's F-35 Joint Strike Fighter could be the Air Force's last manned fighter jet or bomber. The implications are affecting not just active duty forces, but all the other segments of American society which have traditionally relied on a stream of used hardware and people trained to fly it. Lieutenant General Harry Wyatt, director of the Air National Guard, told the House earlier this month he's wondering what will happen to the supply of semi-retired F-35s he was counting on years from now. Quote, "Under the current Air Force plan, the Air National Guard is basically uncovered," unquote. Presumably, missions currently flown by Air Guard units will be forced to follow the lead of the Air Force and transition to a future filled with unmanned aerial vehicles. L3 Avionics Systems has appointed Jay LaFoy president, charged with overseeing all aspects of the business. He'll report to Chris Ganassi, president of the L3 Aviation Products business area. LaFoy has over 25 years in aviation operations, manufacturing, and MRO. He joined L3 in 1996 as director of operations after management positions at Goodrich Aerospace. LaFoy holds an associate degree in business management from Champlain College. In 1992, he completed an executive education program at the University of Michigan Business School. Still ahead, will a union help morale at the TSA? Southwest predicts the recession still has legs. And airport puffer sniffers go the way of the dodo. You're listening to Aero News.
Welcome to Cirrus Design, maker of the world's best-selling personal aircraft, the sleek SR-22. Cirrus planes feature the latest technologies and are equipped with an exclusive, life-saving parachute system. It is our mission to make personal aviation safe, affordable, and convenient. At Cirrus, we offer a test drive like no one else in the business.
We're back to wrap up your Aero Briefing for Friday, May 22nd. I'm Paul Plack. The Transportation Security Administration is a bad place to work. That's the conclusion of the Partnership for Public Service's annual Best Places to Work survey. American Federation of Government Employees National President John Gage is not surprised. Quote, "After all, this agency has the unique distinction of clinging to the bottom of the barrel for many years now," unquote. The union, which is positioning itself to win the right to represent TSA employees in collective bargaining, cites as a recent example of employee mistreatment a policy which prohibited TSA screeners from wearing masks and taking other precautions against the swine flu, even though they work closely with large numbers of airline crew members and the traveling public. Gage adds, quote, "Before the flu emergency, it was uniforms laden with formaldehyde and a refusal by TSA to replace the uniforms or give TSOs the same uniform allowance other DHS workers receive. Before that, it was retaliation for filing workers' compensation claims after being injured on the job. A new TSA administrator should immediately be appointed, and that person's first order of business must be to institute full collective bargaining rights at the agency," unquote. The union notes that President Obama promised during his campaign to appoint a TSA administrator who would support union representation for the workers. If any airline was going to do well in a recession, you'd think it might be a low-cost carrier. But Southwest Airlines' latest guidance to investors includes a report of soft advance ticket sales for May and a prediction that the recession won't be over soon. CEO Gary Kelly commented on Wednesday, quote, "At this point, we have to plan for continued revenue weakness," unquote. He did say the reception for Southwest's new service into New York LaGuardia has been thunderous. But the Wall Street Journal reports analysts are concerned that the fast-turn business model, which helps Southwest control its costs, may face a major challenge in New York. And finally today, if you do fly the airlines regularly, you'll notice something missing at commercial airports. Those obnoxious puffer machines designed to dislodge particles from your clothing so they can be analyzed for traces of bomb-making materials. The program will go down as a classic in the annals of government excess. 4 years ago, when anything labeled security was getting funded, TSA got the green light to spend $30 million to buy 207 of the machines. USA Today reports the money was spent, but only 94 of the machines were ever installed at airports. The other 113 never left storage. At airports, the machines couldn't handle dirt and humidity. TSA spent another $6.2 million trying to fix and maintain them. Now, the agency's giving up. 60 of the machines have already been removed. There's no particular timetable for pulling the rest, but apparently the TSA can't wait to see them gone. Even Hasbrook Miller, a VP of Smith's Detection, which made the puffers, admits, quote, "It was a torturous 4 years. The TSA finally got tired of pursuing that angle and moved on to something else," unquote. That something else is those new full-body scanners. But even the decision to scrap the machines doesn't mean the bonfire in the money pile has gone out. TSA is going to have to spend another $1 million decommissioning the machines. You know, wouldn't you think, given the apparent bottomless budget for anything labeled security, that TSA could have found a few bucks to pay for its own new mandate of security badges for private pilots at commercial airports? That's the latest from Aero News. Okay, soapbox mode off. Remember to check out the ANN special feature. Today, it's part two of Jim Campbell's interview with Lycoming VP Ian Walsh, with updates on the company's LSA engine and the honkin' big IO390. And if you haven't done it yet, subscribe to our AeroCasts. Find them on iTunes, Odeo, and at aero-news.net. The Memorial Day weekend is here. That means no AeroCasts on Monday. We'll be back with a full schedule on Tuesday. See you then. I'm Paul Plack. Thanks for listening. Enjoy your weekend and have a clear and unlimited day.